It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Indeed, it is hump day, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts and our most recent op-eds. We'd appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. Have another great show planned for you today. In studio with me is one of my valued partners, Hal Van Herke. He is the owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool. It's great to have you here, Hal.
Thanks, Kim. It's great to be here.
We'll be talking about small business.
Yeah, I'm all ready to go.
I can see that. So that will be the third and fourth segment. We're excited about that. Always like to say thank you to you, our listeners. Thank you for joining us. You've got a purpose today. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And thank you to this great team that I get to work with. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and the people over here at Crawford Broadcasting. Steve, you look like you want to say something.
No, it was noteworthy when Hal came in this morning. He was ready. He was, what they say, loaded for bear.
It certainly looks like that, because it looks like the governor is, I think, taking another assault against small business, Hal Van Herke.
Yeah, that's the way I feel about it, too. It looks like it's coming up. Maybe some of it's necessary, but a lot of it's not. And I thought, you know, given the fact that we look like we're heading for another round of hard lockdowns, not just shutdowns, but I think, so I went and spent some time looking at what the pandemic's done to small business already this year, and, you know, what kind of impact that has on the U.S. overall, U.S. economy, and it's pretty staggering when you look at it.
And Hal Van Herke, we'll talk about it when we're in the third and fourth segment, but apparently somebody told me one of the other talk show hosts said that they think that this is a policy that is trying to move people to a universal-based income.
Yeah, I think there's something like that afoot. I think that if you you look at it historically, the role of small business, in addition to, you know, being the cornerstone of our local communities, the largest segment of employment, the largest segment of job growth in the U.S., the driver of job growth, I think it's because, you know, small business and particularly small business owners have always been conservative, because nothing turns you into a conservative more than having to deal with the government all the time. And so I think that's a very big factor. But it's also, I think there's a strong push towards trying to centralize everybody into either a government employment, government subsistence, or large corporations that they feel like they can control what we do. And the statistics are showing that is what's happening this year.
Okay. Steve and I were talking about that on the way in. We always do this pre-call, and that's exactly where we were at. So that's our teaser for segments 3 and 4. We're going to be talking with Michelle Gruber and her husband, Russell. They both had COVID, and we'll talk with her in this first segment, and they both survived. And you won't want to miss that. In the second segment, Sean Parnell. This is not the Sean Parnell that ran for Congress in Pennsylvania. This is Sean Parnell with Save Our States, which is one of their projects is focusing on protecting the Electoral College. We'll be talking with him about the national popular vote in the second segment. Before we get to all of that, though, our quote for today, I was thinking about entrepreneurship since Hal was going to be in studio. And I went to Peter Drucker. He was an Austrian-born American management consultant, educator, and author, whose writings contributed to the philosophical and practical foundations of the modern business corporation. Now, this has a word in here that you all may think is a bad word, but he's using it as a good word, and that is, the entrepreneur always searches for change, responds to it, and exploits it as opportunity. What do you think of that, Hal Van Herke?
Yeah, I think that I would take exception maybe with the modern use of the word exploit. I think that, you know, Drucker meant that in a positive way. A lot of times it's used in the common usage today as kind of a negative, like taking advantage of mm-hmm. things. But I think it's the idea of the entrepreneur is that, you know, is to identify a need in society, a legitimate need, and find a way to solve that to make life better for a segment of society or of society as a whole.
And then what happens is people trade freely their hard-earned dollars for either that service or that product that they value. And the market, if you don't have government intervention, the market gets to a point where you and I say, Hal, I will trade X amount of dollars for this knife at Castlegate Knife and Tool because I think that that is a great Christmas gift for someone in my family. Right. And you say, well, the price is X. And I, in my mind, say, I think that's a good value. And then we trade. Right. Our money is what we use to trade value for value.
Right. And so it's at least in terms of historical perspective, it's the fairest economy of all. A lot of times you hear socialists talk about, you know, capitalism is not fair, et cetera. But the reality is the most fundamental part of capitalism is allowing two individuals to set the price of a transaction so that that transaction is a mutually free transaction of their own free will and accord.
And that's the beauty of the American idea and free markets and capitalism. So before we continue that conversation, on the line with me is Michelle Gruber. And she and her husband both had COVID. Michelle Gruber, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Now, Michelle, you're an assistant VP at First American State Bank here in Greenwood Village, another great partner of mine. And your husband has his own commercial real estate firm in Denver that specializes in representing small business owners with their commercial real estate needs. Now, you and your husband, Russell, contracted COVID, correct?
You are correct.
Were you sick?
Good morning, Kim. This is Russell. I think I was probably the first person that got it in our home. And I would say I had a fairly minor head cold. You know, I didn't have the fever, none of the loss of taste. Basically, what I had was a nasal congestion and a little bit of fatigue.
How about you, Michelle?
I ended up contracting it from Russell. I wouldn't consider for the first week that I had symptoms. It felt much like allergies and needing a decongestant. And then about after 7 days after that symptom started, I started feeling the anxiety side of it with heart palpitations, which is a new symptom that they're showing.
And how long did that last?
That lasted for about 4 days, and I'm totally back to normal, absolutely no issues anymore.
Did either of you take any of the treatments like hydroxychloroquine or the Remdesivir or any of that?
No, we both did not seek treatment. We actually just went through to do the rapid test just to go back to work.
Okay, and let's see, the antibody test is, is that the one that's the blood test and the nasal one? I have them mixed up, but which test did you each take?
We took the antigen, which is just to see if you have coronavirus currently, and that's a nasal swab, much like a flu or a strep, you know, kind of swab.
Okay, and how long ago was this that you had this?
That was last Wednesday, 2 weeks ago.
Okay, 2 weeks ago.
Two
Wednesdays ago. Okay. How about people in your sphere of influence? Has anybody else gotten coronavirus?
No, that's actually really interesting. So our children were negative. My parents that we spend a lot of time with were negative. All of my coworkers at the bank were negative. And in fact, we actually had some family stay with us the weekend before Russell's symptoms started, and they were all negative.
Okay. And again, I'm talking with Michelle Gruber and Russell Gruber, and they both have survived the coronavirus, which is fantastic. Michelle, what do you want people to know about your experience with COVID?
I just think that there's a lot of divisiveness in our culture, especially in the 21st century. In March, our government forced lockdowns, quarantines, social distancing, masks, good hygiene. And now, even though all of these strategies have failed, the governor is trying to cancel Thanksgiving. Yesterday, he announced Denver, Arapahoe, Mesa, and Jefferson counties, along with 10 additional counties, will move to level red, meaning things like restaurants will temporarily close, indoor dining, outdoor seating only for families, gyms reduced capacity even further from 20% to 10%, and schools are moving to remote learning, even down to preschool in our area. I pulled statistics yesterday from the CDC and the .gov website.
Okay.
Colorado statistics for COVID right now, 12.6% positive rate, meaning people are actually getting it. It's the cases we all hear about it. But Colorado has only had about 2,300 deaths due to COVID out of the 172,000 cases, meaning that we have a 1.34% mortality rate. Also, I found something that was
which the other thing, and I know you know numbers, Michelle, which means on the other side, we have over a 98% survival rate.
Exactly. It's kind of, I read something in the Wall Street Journal calling this a case epidemic, not a pandemic. The media is really focusing on cases, and to me, it seems like it's kind of fear-mongering.
And Russell, I mentioned this yesterday. I think there's a difference in leadership. I was mentioning Churchill during World War II when London and Britain was under attack. He stepped forward instead of scaring people. He talked about hope and courage. But yet we're hearing from the politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties all of this fear. I find that that's a real difference in leadership. Do you have a comment on that, Russell?
Well, I've got a strong leadership background, so leadership's something I believe in pretty firmly. I don't think, you know, I think you got to always lead by example. And if you're a negative leader, that's just not going to be a long, successful thing. You know, Michelle is fantastic with numbers. She's very brilliant that way. I tend to just look at the things that are happening in this surge, Kim, to me is, quite honestly, it's more evidence of our people, the people of Colorado, the people of America. I think everybody's really starting to show their signs that they're tired of being kind of like suppressed. And, you know, the government's really not speaking for everybody right now. The people want to be outside. I think there's folks that recognize that, you know, this virus may not be as negative for everybody as the media certainly seems to be making it out to be. I work for a lot of companies that the employees, they're happy to go to work. They've got pride in their job, and to be told that they can't do that, and that may be one of the only things that they've got pride in, is probably taking a greater toll than I think the virus potentially takes, certainly on their mental state.
Well, certainly it's the dignity of work. And Michelle and Russell, I want people to find the hope in that you both got COVID, you both survived it, and we have over a 98%, actually about 98.5%, Michelle, you're the real number person, survival rate. And that's what we need to focus on. And just one last thing, I saw a meme, Michelle, and it was a SWAT team, and they had a battering ram at somebody's home. And it says, we know that you bought a 12 to 14, or you bought a turkey that feeds 12 to 14 people. We can't. I just don't think we can cancel Thanksgiving, Michelle.
I don't either. I mean, life is so short. You know, we're talking about my kids' grandparents spending big holidays and traditions with them. And frankly, people, it's just not even as contagious as people are scared of. The media hysteria just does not match the statistics or the numbers.
Well, Michelle Gruber and Russell Gruber, I am so glad to have this conversation. And you contracted COVID and you survived it. And there's a lot of hope. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim. Take
care.
A great day.
You have a great day as well. And before we go to break, one of my great partners is Hooters Restaurants. They have five locations, Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. And they have all kinds of specials going on. They do have patios as well. I imagine that they'll be getting creative regarding whatever the rules are coming out there. But we need to support our small businesses. Hal Van Herke, owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool, is in studio. We're going to be talking about that. But Hooters restaurants, they have to-go specials. They have their patios. And certainly they have party packs to go, all kinds of things. But support our small businesses. Hooters Restaurants is one of my great partners. Their barbecue shrimp is super good. And so go to HootersColorado.com for more information. That's HootersColorado.com. We'll be right back with Sean Parnell with Save Our States.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And thank you for joining us. On the line with us is Sean Parnell. He is the Senior Legislative Director of Save Our States, and they are focusing on protecting the Electoral College. Sean Parnell, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on, Kim.
This is important work that you are doing at Save Our States, and it's through the Oklahoma, now I don't have it right on my tip of my tongue. What is that? The Oklahoma Legislative Policy Council? Is that right?
The Oklahoma Council of Public Affairs is the organization that hosts us. We're a project of that organization.
We actually had your chairman of the board on a few weeks ago, and we were, which was great having him as well. But you guys are focused on the Electoral College. There's a real assault on the Electoral College out here in Colorado. We passed the national popular vote. I don't think that people understood in doing so that they are giving their voice and their vote to large population centers. What, in light of what has happened there, what's your thoughts on the Electoral College right now, Sean Parnell?
Sure. Specifically related to Colorado, I agree. I think it's really unfortunate that Coloradoans decided, a bare majority, but nevertheless did decide, to effectively cancel their state's vote in the presidential selection process and instead allow voters in Los Angeles County and New York City and the Chicago metropolitan area to decide how Colorado will vote in the when the Electoral College meets. As far as what's going on nationally, I mean, obviously we're very concerned. This is a very well-funded attempt to effectively abolish the Electoral College, to change the very nature of our federal republic, and eliminate one of the key checks and balances that the Founding Fathers put into the Constitution.
Why do you think that there's this well-funded movement to try to make this happen?
The motivations vary from person to person. I mean, generally, when I speak with people who support this sort of thing, they have a real misunderstanding about what democracy is and sort of what our form of government is. They essentially view majority rule or even plurality rule as really the only appropriate definition. They don't really have a whole lot of respect or regard or understanding of the idea that we're a nation of states, that it is important that whoever leads the nation have broad geographic support, not simply concentrated support in a handful of areas of the country. Frankly, when I talk with some people, it gets down to, sheer frustration over the fact that they're a Democrat and, twice in the last 20 years, we've had a president who did not win a popular vote majority or plurality. And you know, there's sort of this partisan gloss on a lot of this as well.
The founders were quite brilliant in putting the Electoral College into place because they realized that they wanted to make sure that the smaller population states had a voice. And that's why I'm just so frustrated that Colorado gave our vote and our voice to these big population centers. And it seems like the narrative of Democrats for quite some time is that we care about the little guy. And we're actually seeing that that's not really the case. Big government, big business like each other. But in pushing forward the national popular vote, they're discounting the little guy, the little states. Why was it so brilliant that the founders put the Electoral College into the Constitution?
Well, I mean, there were a number of things going on with the creation of the Electoral College. You're exactly right that the protection of the small states, you know, in those days, Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Massachusetts were far and away the largest states, and the smaller states, the New Hampshires, the New Jerseys, the Georgias, simply weren't going to sign on to a system in which the larger states had all of the power when it came to deciding who would be the president. They were also trying to solve a real kind of thorny problem. Originally, their plan, and it was part of James Madison's Virginia plan, they were going to have Congress select the president. And that was the plan for most of the convention, in fact, but there was a lot of concern over you know, whether the president would be able to be independent of and a check on Congress if the president had to be elected and reelected potentially by Congress. So what they wound up doing, and there was talk throughout the convention of using electors to select the president. There's this sort of myth that it was, you know, the argument was between a direct election and the Electoral College, and actually what the argument was between was using electors or having Congress appoint the president. But what the real brilliance in my mind of the founding fathers in terms of the Electoral College was realizing that as a nation of states, that these states that had come together to form the Union, that it was the states that were the appropriate constituency to decide you know, who would be the leader of the new nation.
And that's why I go back to this. It's so astounding that Coloradans voted to give our state, our vote and our voice to somebody else. And I guess we just didn't do a great job of explaining it. But this is something that I think should be done from an educational standpoint in our schools. And I know that universities, many of the liberal universities have been pushing to their students to get rid of the Electoral College. And so people that are graduating that quote unquote are supposed to be really smart don't seem to understand the brilliance of the Electoral College. Sean Parnell, what's your final thought on that?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people, you know, certainly kids coming out of college, but just a lot of adults don't understand the brilliance of our federal republic in general, of which the Electoral College is a key component, in that it's very important that we have things like the Bill of Rights, separation of powers, federalism, the U.S. Senate that represents states. I think that you're right, that there's a lack of education on the, you know, why we need to appreciate the fact that we aren't a pure democracy, that the majority does not always get its way.
And what can we do about this? Now that Colorado has voted for this, they're trying to get a whole bunch of different states. It's unconstitutional. There is a way to change the Constitution, and that's through the amendment process. They don't believe they can get it done that way. So they're doing this National Popular Vote Compact. What do we do about this, Sean Parnell?
I mean, I think in Colorado, the thing to do is to let your state legislators know that, you know, you want them to bring this back up and repeal National Popular Vote in Colorado. It's an interstate compact. The state has the right to withdraw at pretty much any time. And so that's probably the best thing. As far as the national stage, I would just, you know, ask people to talk to their friends and family, you know, if they're on Facebook, when they're at the Thanksgiving, you know, maybe not at the dinner table, but when they're talking with their friends and family, just explain to them why it is so important that we not be a pure democracy, which has the sort of, the tyranny of the majority threat always looming, and why it's important that the states remain as independent, sovereign political entities, not simply administrative subunits of the national government.
Sean Parnell, that actually clarified even more things for me, and I've been studying this for quite some time, but you are the senior legislative director of Save Our States, which is a project of the Oklahoma Council of Public Affairs. Sean Parnell, let's stay in touch. Keep us up to speed on this, because this is super important.
Will do.
Okay, thanks so much. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, a great partner of mine. Jason, what is going on with the markets?
Well, Kim, yesterday was an interesting day. The markets looked pretty rough yesterday morning at the open. The Dow was down over 400 at one point, maybe even a little bit more, and then started fighting and clawing its way back throughout the day. Now, we did still end with a loss, but it was fairly insignificant, down 167 yesterday on the Dow. The market did close near its high point for the day, which is a positive. And then also the volume yesterday on the down day was lower. So that was another positive. And pretty much, Kim, the same type of action across the board with the NASDAQ, S&P, and the small caps. Down in the morning, buyers came in later in the day and erased a good part of the losses.
Jason, how close are we to the highs? We're pretty close to a record high, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. For example, the NASDAQ's record high is 12,074. Yesterday, we closed at 11,900, so we're, a couple hundred points away. And the Dow is also, it's basically there, Kim. The Dow's old new high was 29,568, which was set back in February. And then, now it sits at 29,783, which is, a new high from there. And it's just barely off the high that the Dow set yesterday. I can't get my little cursor to lay on there, but it's just shy of 30,000 yesterday.
Okay.
The day before, sorry.
Not a problem. This is opportunity. Jason, when we were talking, when this whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus, China virus thing occurred, the market took a big dive. I know that my tummy was like, what's going on? And with the market at this high, I think that it may make sense to this is not investment advice, but to actually maybe move some things into a more defensive position, particularly don't know what the tax structure is going to be next year. Between now and the end of the year is a good time to sit down with you or one of your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management and do a discovery session. Doesn't cost anything, and I think that would be a fine idea.
Well, it doesn't hurt, Kim, if you don't have a solid, thorough, overall plan to provide yourself with a paycheck once you're retired, or to just, protect your money and save it, and if you're not going to use it to efficiently get it down to the kids and grandkids, all of those things are part of a thorough plan. It's kind of a blueprint or a roadmap, and maybe worth making one or getting a second set of eyes on the one you have to see what it looks like going forward. If you don't have a map, you never know where you're going to end up.
That's for sure. So people can reach you at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600, or we've got this great landing page at AIR, that's AIRpresidential.com, AIRpresidential.com. Jason, thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. Bye, Kim.
Okay. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Hal Van Herke, another great partner of the Kim Munson Show. He is the owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool, located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. And we're going to be talking about small business, Hal. It's the lifeblood of the American economy.
It is. And it's taking a beating this year. We just talked about the markets have recovered. They're back to their pre-COVID highs. But that's large corporations. That's large corporations. The story for small business is completely different. Small business is down dramatically across the board year to date.
And that's why we need to talk about this. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Hal Van Herke.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Thank you for joining us. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. In studio with me is one of my great valued partners, and that is Hal Van Herkey with Castlegate Knife and Tool. It's great to have you here.
Great to be here. Enjoyed that old-time Western music lead-in there.
Don't you love that?
Yeah.
I said to Charlie, I love these big old Westerns, and so he puts that in for bumper music quite often. Hal Van Herkey, small business. You mentioned before we went to break that small business is hurting.
Yeah, we just heard in the previous segment that overall, when we talk about the markets, the stock market, the Dow, the S&P, all that type of stuff, NASDAQ. But when you hear that, you're talking about large corporations, major corporations. That's not small business. That's not the 32 million businesses in the U.S. that have less than 500 employees. That's not, that segment of our economy is struggling greatly. It's down anywhere between 34% to 47%, depending on what industry you're in, since the beginning of the year, pre-COVID. It's not recovering like major corporations did, and part of that is because the steps that government took on the state level and really ended up impacting the way small business could go to, could operate. They shut small businesses down. They kept large corporations and Costco's and Walmart's and Amazon Prime members, going. And so there was a massive shift in market share in the U.S. economy over the course of this year from small, independently owned businesses, the people in your community that live next door to you and contribute to your community and give back to the community, to large corporations that see themselves as global citizens and not really beholden to the United States or any other single government.
Hal Van Herkey, I have come to learn that big business and big government look or like each other. And what you just described, it's very apparent. Under policy regarding the COVID-19 Wuhan China virus reaction disruption policy, is they said, okay, big boxes, big business, you can stay open. But little businesses, you're going to have to reduce your capacity, a whole variety of things. And so you can see how big government and their policies would pick winners and losers.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they did, and I don't think it was an accident. I do think the two like each other. It's called an oligarchy. When you have very wealthy corporate elitists buddying up with their government elitists and deciding what policies are going to be best for each other, this is what you get. And that's clearly, we talked earlier about whether or not we're a democracy or we're a constitutional republic, or, whether or not we need to worry about the electoral college or not. But the reality is that we've slipped into an oligarchy, and that's the type of government that we have today, where elites in the corporate sector and elites in the government sector get together and make policy for the rest of us.
Now, we do agree that COVID is real. We had Michelle and Russell on earlier. They contracted the coronavirus. They survived it. In Colorado, we have over a 98.5% survival rate. And then we also know that many of those deaths, and Each life is treasured and valued, but many of those deaths were people that had other underlying conditions. And those people might have contracted the flu and had the same result and died from the flu. But what we've seen then is the narrative right now. Governor Polis is saying that, in fact, he announces new restrictions. I think Michelle mentioned that. But says that Colorado schools, some of them can stay open. And here we now have picking winners and losers. Is the virus so smart that it knows a school or a restaurant? Is it that smart?
Yeah, it knows whether a protest is okay, but a parish is not okay, and going to church is not okay. And you know, a lot of these things are kind of strange, right? And, you know, whether you're sitting in the deli section of a large chain grocery store, that's okay. But if you're sitting in a small business, that's not okay. And, the leisure and hospitality segment has been hit the hardest by this, and that's largely owned by small and medium business. And so has the restaurant and bar industry has been devastated. Mm-hmm. 70% losses in some places in the United States of leisure, hospitality, bar, restaurant businesses, which are almost all small business owned. You know, so that's, you know, it this time around, I hope they try to, you know, at least think about the damage that's doing to livelihoods, to health, to mental health, to physical health, to the ability to maintain and pay for health insurance, et cetera. And those have, that costs lives as well. It's not just the virus. But I agree with you. The virus is not something that's make-believe. It's here. It's real. It seems to have a complete random ability to barely touch somebody that gets it and then completely strike down very quickly somebody else who gets it, and with no rhyme or reason. So it's very, you know, something to take serious. But I think we need to balance that with keeping our economy going and particularly looking out for the businesses that our friends and families and neighbors own.
Al Van Herky, Dr. Jill Vecchio, who's a regular guest on the show, and she also has a place back in Iowa, and she'd been back in Iowa. And the husband of a friend of hers, this is anecdotal, had contracted the COVID-19 Wuhan, China virus. And he did go to the hospital. And Dr. Jill said to her friend, well, have you tried, are you doing any of these treatments? And she said no. And they asked their doctor about it. And he didn't know about that. And it's like, is the CDC not getting this information out to medical professionals that there are treatments? And you have to ask why.
Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, this has been going on since day one with this. I had to tell my primary physician what COVID was. I happened to go in for an annual physical, but she had never heard of it. And so I printed
off. Was this like back in February?
Or it was about early February, yeah.
Okay.
And I went back home, printed out a bunch of stuff that I'd been collecting from China and everything else and from this World Health Organization and CDC, and took it back over to her office, and she was stunned that she hadn't heard anything about it through the official channels that she normally looks at as a physician at that point. And I don't think it's gotten any better either.
I'm not sure. So. But and then we also talked with Michelle and Russell about this whole fear thing, leadership. And I had never thought about this word that Russell mentioned, negative leader.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought about that. But the lead, when I hear the word leader, I think of positive. I think of courage. I think of stepping forward and leading people through this fear instead of using fear to try to control them.
Control people. It's kind of a pretty clear form of evil, I think. You know, that when you have, you know, it's something you would expect an evil type person or a self-important narcissist, you know, that would take on a tactic like that to do that for themselves. And I think that we're kind of short right now on getting the voices out from the real leaders that we have. And a lot of those real leaders are in the community, and their voices are being silenced by politicians and journalists in the media that are just looking for ratings or looking for votes. But I think the real leaders are out there. They're just struggling to find an avenue to get to the people right now because of censorship and other things.
That's why we do this show.
Yeah, exactly.
Is to help people get their voices. And on that note, recommend to your friends and your family to listen in. And I didn't realize this. I'm going to ask producer Steve about this. And that is I never mention that we also have an FM station. And that is 100.7. Everything is mirrored on FM. And the reason I mention that is I was talking to someone the other day, and she said, Kim, I bought a new radio, and it doesn't have AM on the dial. And I actually bought a radio like that as well. And she said, so it was difficult to find the show because I typically haven't listened to, it was actually the America's Veteran Stories. And she said that somebody said that AM is for talk radio, and a lot of radios no longer have the AM on their dial. Do you know anything about that, Producer Steve?
All I can think of is the historical, you know, evolution of radio. Obviously, AM was the first up in the back in the 1920s commercially, or you know, as the FCC would license stations. And then FM came along in the late 40s or early 50s, and manufacturing was, you know, they wanted to make sure it was going to last, it was going to be real before they invested in it. Now we're at the other end of that, and maybe AM is, you know, being slowly phased out, but I also know broadcasters, that's not a big surprise to them. I don't really see it happening, but there's streaming on the web, as KLZ does. There's also the TuneIn app that we publicize sometimes, or we you know, let people know about. So there's a variety of different ways, you know, to capture this show.
Mm-hmm. And also, just so you know, we're KLZ 560, obviously, but you can also find this at 100.7 on your FM dial. And I'm going to start to mention that on a regular basis, because Hal Van Herky, we need to be having these conversations. And my hope is, as we have these conversations, that this helps people get their brains around these issues so that they can talk with friends and family and colleagues about this. Patty had found this from KDVR, and it is a survey that 79% of Colorado restaurants would consider closing for good within 6 months if indoor dining is shut down again. And so instead of negative leadership trying to put fear into people, it seems to me like real leaders would say, how could we address this? How could we make sure that your businesses can stay open, they can thrive and flourish? Because there's all kinds of other consequences if you lose your business.
Right. So a real leader would say, rather than shut those businesses down completely, let's make sure that we first try to, you know, if we have to, reduce the capacity. But let's push people to encourage people to do takeout from the small restaurants, to do pickup from the small restaurants, which is some of the things that they did early on as we were pulling back the original round of shutdowns and lockdowns. And, you know, things like on a personal basis, taking a look especially at your favorite restaurants and your favorite bars and your favorite local small businesses, going out of your way to go order a meal that you can have delivered, or I guess delivery is difficult right now, but go pick up, you know, or go do takeout. And those dollars help keep that business alive. And some of the weaker restaurants, some of the weaker bars and stuff will probably pass away anyway to the wayside. But I think that you can at least try to keep the stronger ones going, well, just by acting yourself and taking the time and making it a point to patronize these businesses, whether it's a local restaurant, bar, boutique, store, shop, whatever. And the biggest time of the year is coming up right now with the holiday season, which is critical to all businesses, particularly in retail. A lot of retailers make their entire year in the between now, the period starting now and the end of the year. If that's a bad time for them, they won't be around next year. So small business Saturday, instead of spending all of your money on Black Friday at the big box stores, or on Cyber Monday with all, you know, with Amazon, you know, save a lot of that money and put it aside and purposely go spend it on small business Saturday and turn that into small business Sunday while you're at it.
And when is small business Saturday?
That's right after, I don't remember the exact date, but it's you have Thanksgiving, then you have Black Friday, and the next day is Small Business
Saturday. I think it's November 28th. I'll take a look at that.
27th, 28th, something like that,
for sure.
And I think we need a Small Business Sunday while we're at it.
I think that's a good idea. So we're going to go to break. This is Kim Munson. In studio with me is Hal Van Herky with Castlegate Knife and Tool, and I'd like to talk a little bit about Castlegate Knife and Tool. We'll be right back.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show, and thank you for joining us. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. In studio with me is Hal Van Herke, a great partner of the Kim Munson Show. He is the owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool. And Castlegate Knife and Tool has a big announcement.
Yeah, after many long hours and months of effort, we finally got our new website launched.
Yay!
And so it went live last night after literally almost a year's worth of work and planning to migrate from our old website to our new one. And one of the main reasons why we did that is that we're growing both online and we're growing in the store. And we were having trouble keeping our inventory together, and we were getting too many cases where people would order something from us and it wasn't in stock and it wasn't good for customer service and it wasn't a great experience for anybody. So we spend a lot of time and effort, and this is kind of what small businesses do. I mean, my wife was spending months loading inventory items in, you know, into a database to, you know, and taking photos of items. And my daughter was taking time away from college in Wisconsin to help manage a small inventory team of people that were loading inventory items. And my older daughter was helping with art and photo imaging on the website. So it was a family operation, you know, and it takes a while when you're running the business and you are the business to actually try to improve the business at the same time. But that's what every small business does. Yeah.
And it's not just a 40-hour-a-week job, is it?
No, it's a from the minute you wake up until the time you go to bed, if you can sleep, kind of job.
And truly, Castlegate Knife and Tool is a family-owned business. I've been out to Castlegate Knife and Tool. It's pretty impressive. And you don't just have knives and tools. You also have some cool watches. There's all kinds of things that people, I would recommend on Small Business Saturday, to go out to Sedalia. You're open 7 days a week.
We are.
And there's some great restaurants out there as well. And do a little Christmas shopping. Knives, I always wonder what to get at guys for Christmas. And a knife is a really great gift.
Yeah, knives, every year we find out that people are really pleased with the fact that they thought of knives as a gift. I mean, not even that they got a knife for a gift, but there's a lot of people out there that are just happy that they thought, oh, I could get so-and-so on my list. There's always that hard person on your list. Mm-hmm. Or there's always that person in the family that doesn't make a list, right, for their Christmas shopping, usually the dad. Uh-huh. Who says, oh, I don't need anything. I'd go buy it myself if I needed it. But, you know, dads like knives. Women like knives. I always say that the knife is the one thing that unifies humanity. Everybody in the world owns a knife. They might not everybody has shoes, not everybody wears pants, but everybody owns a knife.
I had never thought about it like that. Now, you have all kinds of knives. You have knives for collectors, military personnel, the sportsmen. I have actually got to go to a couple of weddings and got a couple of beautiful steak knife sets as gifts and got the nicest thank you notes back from people as well.
Those were nice custom knives from France that you got. Mm-hmm. They were steak knife sets. They have very nice. Yeah. Yeah, we appreciate the business too, so thank you. Yeah,
most definitely.
We have knives from all over the world. We try to carry any knife we're carrying that's made in the U.S. We try to carry it in stock either in the store or online. But we also have knives from all over the world, and we have knives ranging in price from $20 to $4,500, you know, works of art that people collect, etc. So we have a little bit of everything. We also carry all kinds of other edge tools like hatchets, tomahawks, axes, etc.
So if somebody has an axe to grind, you're the place to go, right?
Yeah, if they need their axe ground, we might be able to help them with that. So yeah, that's what we do, and nobody knows why we started this, but it's been going well. It's, you know, one of those situations where a lot of the other competitors that were brick and mortar stores have have drifted away over the years, and it's mostly online, but we've managed to make it work both, and we're growing quite nicely, and we're very happy with it. And we make it be fun while we're at it. So.
And you're located in the old bank building in Sedalia.
Yeah, it was like an old territorial bank. It's a 101-year-old building, and then for many years it was the U.S. Post Office in Sedalia. And Sedalia, for some people who are new to Colorado, is not the one in the middle of the state, in the middle of nowhere. Sedalia is about 15 minutes south of Highlands Ranch, between Highlands Ranch and Castle Rock on Highway 85.
Yeah, I think people get Sedalia and Salida confused.
They do.
And Sedalia.
I almost didn't want to mention the other one.
Okay.
We've had people drive all the way there and then find out it's the wrong town.
Although it's a nice little drive there, that's for sure. And I find Sedalia is just kind of a taste of Americana.
It is. It's like a little tiny town between two sets of railroad tracks, that is like a little tiny block of like a place that time forgot. It has a little main street. There's several really nice bars and restaurants there that are still doing quite well. Fancy Italian restaurant. There's Bud's Bar that's got famous cheeseburgers because that's all they sell for food there. Brand new wide open spaces, a motorcycle bar that had opened up on the corner there that's fantastic. You know, so, and it's, you know, we helped the little elementary school kids get a chance to do our trunk or treat instead of trick or treat because of COVID concerns. And we had about 500 kids, you know, that came through. But then we did it that night in Castle Rock with Dads of Castle Rock and had 2,500 come by, and we emptied out every candy shelf in all the stores Castle Rock.
You're running over getting more candy.
Yeah,
right?
We had people just running shuttles to get as much candy as they could find everywhere in Castle Rock when we did that. But that was with Dads of Castle Rock. But, you know, that's what small businesses do. You get back. We're always doing every charity thing that comes up in Sedalia, we're donating to the museum, to any woman's group. Anything that comes up, we're donating. Every children's thing, if they're having a parade or whatever. Castle Rock is increasingly the same way for us. We're working a lot with Dads of Castle Rock, which is a men's charitable organization, which does a lot of work in Castle Rock. And we're donating to that community as well. So,
Hal Van Herky, this brings up something that when I was on city council, I started to really notice this. And this is that we have different, it may be a city, it may be a county, the state, these economic development offices where bureaucrats are paid six figures plus benefits to create business. What they do is they pick winners and losers. And I always voted against that, because I said, if you are giving, quote unquote, this restaurant over here, or this developer over here that's bringing in a restaurant, a break on their taxes or a share back on taxes, I said, that's unfair to this little business over here that has been paying their taxes. They pay their business personal property tax. They're supporting the local little league team. And it's been the small business that does all that. And you just confirm that to me.
Yeah. It's just like what happened with the COVID relief stuff. It's the big businesses that have the accountants and the attorneys and the extra staff to go out and file those forms and get first in line and lobby the local lobbyists, whoever that has to be, to get, you know, the money. And a lot of these government programs end up always going to the wrong people. They go to the largest people who, you know, companies that don't need it. It doesn't go to the small business next door that was working so much they didn't even know about the program, right, where they didn't have time to fill out the paperwork or filled it out wrong. But, small business pays a lot of taxes. Maybe they don't always pay them on time, but they pay a lot of taxes, you know. So, I think that, you know, some of those programs, if they're done right, they can be great. And there's been times in Colorado, there's been a lot of money thrown at trying to turn Pueblo around.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, manufacturing zones and stuff like that create jobs. If it's done right, it can be nice. But too often, it just goes to another large corporation.
I've always said that if it's better for this corporation to not have to pay as much in taxes, it's probably it's good for small businesses as well. How about we lower taxes, lower rules, lower regulations?
It's one of the things that President Trump did really well right off the bat when he came into office is he eliminated a lot of regulations. And the people who knew the impact of that right off the bat were small business owners, because you spend a lot of your time wading through that paperwork instead of working with your customers or inventing new products or opening new stores or whatever.
And that's, again, big business, big government like each other because they can navigate all that red tape. Hal Van Herky, it is so great to have you in studio. Castlegate Knife and Tool has their brand new website up and running, and I would encourage that you do some of your Christmas shopping with Castlegate Knife and Tool on November 28th, which is Small Business Saturday.
Or you can start today at www.castlegate.com.
There you go. That's www.castlegate.com. Hal Van Herky, your value partner. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. And our quote for today is from Peter Drucker. And he said this. He said, cultivate a deep understanding of yourself. not only what your strengths and weaknesses are, but also how you learn, how you work with others, what your values are, and where you can make the greatest contribution. Because only when you operate from strengths can you achieve true excellence. What do you think of that, Hal Van Herken?
Great quote.
Okay.
Great individual.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was really somebody that a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs read and study and was heavily influenced by Peter Drucker. Yeah.
And on that, small business, support our small businesses. And you can start right now, for sure. But on November 28th, which is the Saturday after Thanksgiving, that is Small Business Saturday, and highly encourage that you support our small businesses. And so, my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. Young, like a new